Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 205 of the... Nope.
We just did this. Yep, there it is.
We just did this.
Seconds ago. Episode
206 of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's a fine, rainy Thursday.
It is. It's very rainy, but it's March 1st, and we're recording this, and it's above 40 degrees. In Cleveland, so I'm not going to complain.
Accurate. That is okay. True.
Let me talk about the episode.
Yes, please.
Good. I've been waiting almost a year to do this. So today's episode is a conversation I had with Tomi Adeyemi at Book Expo America last year at the beginning of June. At the time, she was finishing up edits and everything of her first novel and working on her second one slowly. And now, as this is coming out on Monday, tomorrow her book, Children of Blood and Bone, will be released. And it is a big deal.
It's a very big deal.
It is. She is everywhere. We talked about that in our March books release episode last week. But anywhere you go that is book related, you'll see her face and her cover. And I couldn't be happier for her. But the cool thing about this interview is I was re-listening to it this morning just to make, like, for editing. And I think I was one of the first people that spoke with her about the book on a publicity type of a thing, because you can hear in the interview, she's very excited about talking about the book. And it was a really great conversation to hear how excited she was so early in the process. And also kind of seeing how the world has changed a little bit from June of last year through March now, because we referenced some things that were going on at the time, and again, she can't reference things in the future,
right?
But it was just so much fun, and you'll hear her, just like her passion. She's so infectious and wonderful. Yeah, she's great. I am so excited for everyone to hear this and to finally hear it. I've had a file on my desktop that says all BEA interviews that is sitting there, because I don't like to move stuff off my desktop until it's out
just
there.
Just in case.
Because I forget. So I finally get to move that, because this is the last one of all those. And I'm planning for this Book Expo America. So it is a weird kind of torture to have an amazing conversation and then have to wait almost 10 months for people to hear it. But you get to hear it now, so I'm excited for you. I will say one of my favorite things, we've never talked about this, one of my favorite things about doing this whole podcast is when we talk to authors, especially the ones that are, you know, relatively big and famous now, and it'd be understandable if they just sort of mailed in the conversation. And without fail, every single person we've ever spoke to on the podcast, like, they really are engaged in the conversation and they seem to enjoy talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this, I love getting to share their stories, but mainly I just love this little, like, there's this little snapshot of this person who is about to become a huge deal. But for a half hour, she sat down and was engaged with the conversation. And you could hear how passionate she was about her book and literature and society. So it's just, it never fails to be really cool in my mind when authors will sit down with us. And
Right. Again,
they're about to go do something, some publicity thing, or sign books for 500 people. But at the end of the day, like, we have this little half hour, 45 minutes, however long we sit down with them, where they're like, they're there, and it's really cool. So, And again, that's something I'll always remember talking about Tomi, is just having this conversation with her and have her be truly, like, into it, which is great. So, if people want to get a hold of us, how can they do that?
They can find us on Instagram and Twitter at ProBookNerds, and they can email us at ProfessionalBookNerds@Overdrive.com.
They sure can. Anything else you think people should know about on this Monday?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm very excited for you all to finally get to hear this conversation with Tomi Adeyemi on the Professional Book Nerds podcast. Hey everyone, it's Adam again, and it is my distinct pleasure to introduce you to an author whose name you might not recognize just yet, but she's about to take over the world. Tomi Adeyemi?
Yeah.
All right. Tomi Adeyemi is a Nigerian-American writer and creative writing coach based in San Diego, California. After graduating from Harvard with an honors degree in English literature, she received a fellowship that allowed her to study West African mythology and culture in Salvador, Brazil. Her debut YA fantasy novel, Children of Blood and Bone, will be coming out early in 2018, and a movie based on the books will be coming shortly after. First off, congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm really excited to be here.
Hearing about your book and everything about you is amazing, so I'm so excited for people to learn about you. So can you first maybe give us an introduction to Children of Blood and Bone?
Yeah, so Children of Blood and Bone is my debut novel, and it's a YA West African fantasy, and it's about a girl who's fighting to bring magic back to her people. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's so personal. Like, I tell my friends, I'm like, it's kind of like a fan fiction diary entry because it's like, I love it as a story. Mm-hmm. And I'm like Nigerian, and my parents came here when they were my age, so in their early 20s. Mm-hmm. And I like just to be able to put that culture like in the book and make it her world, and then to be able to be in this like new magical place that, yeah, I'm like, hey guys, this is like a part of my heart. And then the message, or I don't want to say message because it's not a message book, but the book was written for me during a period of a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. Because that's where it's like I felt like every week and sometimes every day I was opening the news or Twitter, right, and seeing headlines about, you know, like an unarmed black man or black child, mm-hmm, being shot and killed by the police, and then having, you know, there'd been no justice afterwards. Yeah. So it's like, and because it takes a long time to prosecute things, there was just these, it was constant. So you hear about a new one, and then you hear about one that happened 3 months ago where the cop was let off.
Yeah.
And so it was just sort of this period where I was feeling really, yeah, just really afraid and kind of really hopeless. And mm-hmm. So this book was my chance to kind of, it was really my therapy.
Yeah.
And, you know, something really bad would happen, I'd be crying and I'd be upset, and my boyfriend would be like, you need to go write. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would go write. So there's some parts that are actually just diary entries.
Yeah.
Where it's like something really bad happened and I wrote this out, and it happens to be exactly what my character's, yeah, feeling. So it's really personal on all levels. So it's kind of, that makes it really crazy and exciting, mm-hmm, because, you know, people are starting to read it, and I'm like, yeah, it's like on one, the story is personal. What inspired the story is, right, personal. The world is personal. Yeah. So it's crazy, but it's also really exciting because I'm like, oh, this is my heart, like in book form. Mm-hmm. And people are being really supportive and receptive of that. So it's just like, yeah, a crazy kind of acceptance.
I was just going to say, you touched on something, and I was going to bring it up a little bit later, but since you mentioned it about, you know, all these horrible things have been happening, and unfortunately, like you said, it seems like every day something, yeah, terrible is happening. A lot of people will see those types of things and they'll lash out, or they'll just take to Twitter and in 140 characters they'll tell, yeah, everyone what's wrong with it. It seems like writing this book was, like you said, kind of therapeutic for you. Kind, yeah, of this was your outlet, more or less.
It truly was, because especially things like this, they make you feel so small, mm-hmm, and they make you feel so hopeless. And to be, like, completely honest, they make you feel like, why am I even alive if this is how my life can end?
Right.
Or if this is how I can lose my mom or, mm-hmm, my dad or my brother or my sister. Or, you know, because even me, I wouldn't even fully say it's a fear of this happening to me. It's a fear of it happening to someone I love, mm-hmm, and then me being left with that wreckage,
yeah,
which I don't know. You know, I'm almost like, I feel like a Disney movie, because all of my books have, like, before this have had, like, dead parents, you know? So there's, like, a very deep fear, oh, inside me. And, yeah, then, like, this just magnified it. And so you do feel really hopeless and really small. Uh-huh. And then for me, the writing is, like, that's where I feel like, okay, here's my sword. Mm-hmm. And, one, I feel better getting it all out on the paper. But then I'm like, oh, someone can see this, yeah, and, like, if they can feel these things and think about it in a new way, then I've actually changed something. So, mm-hmm, it goes from being something where it's like, I have absolutely no power, mm-hmm, I am helpless, and to like, no, I can do something, and oh, the thing that I can do about it can also actually help change the world in, right, a way. So that's sort of the craziest part, yeah, about books, because books are sort of the closest we have to being inside someone else's mind. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, and you actually you touched on something really interesting. The actions and the things that take place in this in your story are based on, you know, tragic and unfortunate events that have happened in the real world, but the story itself is very much in a kind of a magical world.
Yeah.
And so something I'm always curious about when I'm talking about fantasy stories, Leigh Bardugo, who we were just talking about before we started recording, who we both love, and Kate Elliott actually both told me that when they're writing their fantasy worlds and they're building them out, they start with a map.
Yeah.
And then from there they can kind of piece out how they see things in the world, and then they'll start working on, well, how does magic work in this world? So for you, how did the world building take place?
It started with a picture of this girl. It was a beautiful, I'll show it to you like afterwards, because mm-hmm. I feel like I'll waste time if I try and load it. Because I have
bad service. I was going to say that anyway. That's okay. Yeah. Perks of being the host.
Yeah, okay. So it started with a picture of this mom. She was a black girl with like luminescent green hair, and it was just a stunning picture, and I couldn't get it out of my head. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time where I was like, who is this person? Like, what is she? What's her story? What does her world look like? And it sort of started from, so it started with this character. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, what does she do? And I was like, what if she's in a market one day and like her entire world changes? Yeah. And so it sort of started with the plot. Uh-huh. And then I'm like, oh, this is the adventure. So then the world grew with the adventure, because it's kind of like a quest novel. So they visit. It wasn't just like, oh, we're in this one town mm-hmm. where she starts out. It's like, we're going all over this country. So this was actually the first time I had to make a map and be like, what does it look like? And then I was doing like math and being like, okay, they ride lions, and like maybe if a lion runs as fast as a horse and horses do like this many miles per hour, so how many days of travel? And then I'm like, but in the larger arc of a month.
Oh my
so
God, it's like, that's amazing.
So I think it's like I have this all in a notebook, and then I'm like, I'll just say 2 days between them. You know, so I do the math. I'm like, that's too long.
Yeah. That's incredible.
So yeah, it just, for me, it exploded. It started with the character mm-hmm. and then her situation, and then I'm like, oh, this is what her story is, so what does her world look like?
Yeah.
And now I have the map, and I some people who have read early dressed are like, I just wish I had a map. And I was like, a map? And then I sent it to them, and they're like, whoa. And I'm like, yeah. So it's, yeah, but I know the one thing that's constant in my story creation process is it starts with a picture, because mm-hmm. my last book that I tried to seriously get published, it was a picture of these kids jumping off of a roof, mm-hmm. But it was an artist, and it was really like beautiful coloring, and there's sort of, yeah, it was just, I was like, what is this? And then like, so for me it starts with like that one picture, when whether that's a scene or a character, or even a like a setting, mm-hmm. that it's like, oh, well, what takes place here? And then it kind of all grows from, like, sort of like I'm doing all these stuff with my hands.
That's
and
okay.
I'm like, no
I
one
do,
can see.
I do it all the time on the pod. Yeah. So I was just like, insert like in here. Tommy did circle gestures with her hands.
Big circle.
Yeah. From the like, and then from the magical aspects of the story, how did you? Because it's in a fantasy world, it's so important to establish like, here are the roles of magic. Like, this is how things work, so that you understand for the next, you know, 900 pages of 3 books over however long they're going to be.
Yeah, exactly.
This is how it works. So how do you determine what is feasible and what is still nonsensical?
The magic part is really exciting for me, because it's from, or I know you mentioned, like, after college I had this fellowship to go to Brazil. Mm-hmm. And I went there intending to study, like, it was a cultural study, and I thought I was going to be focused on their slave trade, mm-hmm. But then one day it was like, I wanted to go to this museum, and it was closed, and then it started raining, and I went into a gift shop, and the guy was kicking out people who, like, were clearly just trying to be, like, around the rain, so I'm trying to look really interested, because I didn't want to get drenched, and I come across this picture of Orisha, which is it's this West African mythology, so it's big in Nigeria. Brazil also has a very big Nigerian population. It's also big in Latin America, but it was these, in my head, I'm like, this looks like African The Last Airbender. Mm-hmm. You know, it was and like, I love Avatar Last Airbender, but it was like these beautiful images, and it was like superheroes, and it was like magicals, and I was like, what is this? Why have I never seen this? Mm-hmm. As like a lover of stories and things like this, so why have I never heard about it? So I went deep into studying that, and there are these different gods and goddesses, and they represent multiple things. Mm-hmm. Like, one will be like, you know, like single, like god of fire and lightning, but other will be like, oh, another goddess of like love and fertility, mm-hmm. and this. So for me, I drew from like, okay, the magic comes from these gods and goddesses. Yeah. Obviously, you have to simplify. It can't be like, hey, here's magic of love and fertility and lightning. And is that, you know? So it's like you have to make it palatable for like a new world. Mm-hmm. But it was cool to take this thing that was a part of my culture that I didn't even know and then like directly draw magic lines from there and then be like, okay, so let's say you, what is a god of fire and lightning? What does that look like when it's like, what does that look like for someone who just has their powers? What does that look like for a master of it? And then that's where I go into Excel and, you know, map it out.
Oh my God. So much goes into this.
It's crazy. It is. I think that's, I've always been a big reader, but now it's like I 400 times appreciate everything I've ever loved before I started to get published because I'm like, oh, it's not just that first draft. Yeah. It's like,
you know,
because a first draft, it's like, that's one thing. It's like, finish it. But like to get to that published, but like a published book you're proud of, it is so many people, there's so many revisions, it's so many editorial directions, it's so many like maps and Excel spreadsheets if you're a Ravenclaw like me. So it's like a whole thing and but it's really amazing at the end. But now I'm like, I don't just look at a book now when I read it and be like, oh, that was a great story. Like, I want to know the story behind the story. I read all of the acknowledgments. I'm like, I was like, I just want to know everything that went into creating it.
Yeah. I'm picturing like one of those crime scene investigation situations where you have like red yarn. Like, now Adam is doing that gesture. Where you have like always like red yarn. Like, and then the person goes here and then they go over here.
Like, there's all these post-it notes on like my wall at home. And like, now the post-it notes are for book two. But like before, it's just like all this stuff for book one. And you just... And there's post-it notes over my desk, and people are like, oh, you're creative. I was like,
that's such a good answer. Quote-unquote creative.
Creative.
You're like, you just gave me that kind of compliment, didn't you? And so when you're building the voices of your characters and you're finding the different voices of the people that you're going to be writing, for you is character building a lot like story building as a whole, like taking... You know, at first you start with the whole overarching, like, here is going to be the general idea of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then, no, I can't stop talking with my hands. And then you're going to take each person and kind of flesh out them one at a time? Or did you have an idea of, like, certain people?
I honestly think the characters are the hardest. Because for a world, it's like I can decide what a world is. And I can build a map. And then it's much, if I need to tweak something, you know, that's just the world. With the characters... Like, you gotta know. And even, I'm like, why did you write multiple point of views? And I was like, because I have to tell more sides than one. But, like, I'm slapping myself when I'm editing because it's like you need to make them distinct. Mm-hmm. And, like, the main character, I feel like we have the same voice.
Yeah.
She's much more poetic. And she speaks in a British accent in my head. So it's, like, not the exact same voice.
I love that. That's amazing.
Like, when I'm writing, I'm like, oh, like, it's very easy to get into her. And then for the, there's two other points of view. And those ones I really have to, and honestly, that's a lot of what we're revising now is to just make it as, like, fleshed out. Because those ones, it's, the main one comes, the main character comes naturally. The other two characters are really important. And they're, like, I really, really have to, like, get in their head and be like, okay, given everything they've experienced in their life, what would they feel in these moments? What are the things that they would pick up? And sometimes when you're revising, it's like, oh, I thought the character was about this, but... what if the character is about this? And suddenly it like changes throughout the entire novel. So I know for me the character is the stuff that I feel like I revise the most to get right, because everything else you can kind of, everything else feels more stationary. It's like if you change something in the plot, okay, we're at page like from 300 to 350, we're changing it, but it's like stationary. The character is so much bigger than all that.
And then something else, and you kind of touched on this a little bit. There's a squeaking in the background. That's okay. You touched on this just a little bit. I'm going to give them a second.
Cut.
This is cut, apparently, in my brain. Okay. No, not this, an active cutting thing I could have said. This is cut, which is actually extend. Anyway. all right, so we talked about this a little bit in the beginning when you were describing the book, and you know, you've been... really vocal about the importance of, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement in, you know, on your social media and on your website and things like that. And, you know, race relations and prejudice, unfortunately, is not in a very good place in our country. And it's that's a good way of putting it, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's a nice way.
And I know that it's really essential in your book. And I get really angry because I'll see on social media people say, like, yeah, well, all lives matter. And to me, and I think my favorite message I've ever seen about that is someone being like, saying all lives matter is like going to a doctor and telling them, I have a broken arm. And then the doctor being like, yeah, well, all your bones matter.
Yeah.
And it just, it's so infuriating me that I see people. So for you, how important was it to put those aspects in your fantasy world?
Okay, so if we take it back to what's going on right now, mm-hmm. without trying to be too polarizing, sure. you know, in our past election, there was a certain candidate that the Harry Potter generation referred to as Voldemort. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because we grew up in this, like, you know, a lot of us who grew up in this Harry Potter world, mm-hmm. we see Voldemort, we know the behaviors of Voldemort, yeah. and so whether it's on fantasy or real, it's like, oh, I've seen this before. This right. was Voldemort. You yeah. know, nose is a little different, but general... same thing. So, and I think those things, it's like, on one part of it, it's like, yes, I want to run around with my wand, but on the other part, it's like, you understand it generally. It's mm-hmm. like, whether, and Harry Potter is a story about persecution, mm-hmm. you know, there's, and you know, you don't think about it that way, but when it's in a completely different world, it's very clear to you that someone's saying, like, hey, you're a mudblood, you don't belong at Hogwarts, right. you know that's wrong.
Yeah.
If you take it into this world, and you're like, hey, you're an immigrant, you don't belong in my country, suddenly it's more complicated. It's not actually more yeah. complicated, but because it's based in this, there's all these different, it's not as black and white, literally, as mm-hmm. when it's in a book. So I think it's important to teach these just general lessons of humanity yeah. In a way that where someone's not going to bring their preconceived notions
right.
and be like, Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. And yeah. you're like, okay, well, that's not what I'm saying. But you know what? Let me just tell you a story.
Right.
And let me... like describe something that I can literally go on YouTube and show you mm-hmm. like a video of this girl being thrown down by a policeman. And okay, maybe so we're in this world, so there's all these different in theory ways that you can respond to that. Now I'm going to show you in a book, I'm just going to show you a kid being attacked by someone who's supposed to protect her.
Right.
You know that's wrong. So I feel like it's very important to take these, sometimes people are like, it's just fiction, but I was like, okay, but if you understand it now, then you can do something about it in the real world.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's really important, especially because we have these great books out, you know, like The Hate U Give out, it's amazing.
Yes.
I'm running around BEA trying to find Dear Martin, uh-huh. you know, like there's so many great books coming out, both in, or especially in YA. And I think that's amazing. I feel like we need so much more because they're so informative. But I think you also need some of those same examples and messages in a fantasy. And so it's like, okay, I'm in my Hogwarts, but I'm yeah. learning about like accepting humans mm-hmm. and like not letting bullies like rise to positions of power
yeah.
and do a lot of bad things. So I think especially in fantasy
yeah.
that's where you learn a lot of those lessons, and it's not like a preaching thing, but it's just like you just see it and mm-hmm. it's very clear to you, like, hey, you shouldn't treat people like that
yeah.
So I'm like, here, you don't like that wording, let me make it really simple.
It is, by the way, it is taking all of my maturity
yeah.
podcast host skills to not veer this off into just a Harry Potter conversation
yeah.
because that happens so incredibly often on our podcast, so people probably don't want to hear me talk about how much I love Harry
yeah.
Potter. So recently there's been several stories about your incredible, you know, situation where within like a week you got a book deal and a movie deal, and like people will call you an overnight success.
Oh,
or like
yeah.
an
people
instant
love
star.
That word.
Yeah. But in reality, and the thing that it makes me irritated about seeing that is like, I know because I talk to authors all the time.
Yeah.
This is years and years and years of work for you. So in fact, you mentioned this, you spent several years editing and working on a book that isn't the book that's
yeah,
coming out.
I mean, like, so this book came together pretty quickly for me, but like as we're talking, you know, I described my spreadsheets and
right.
everything,
yeah,
like
yeah,
my post-it notes,
quote unquote, pretty quickly.
My other book, it was about 3 to 4 years from like idea to first draft to trying to get it published mm-hmm. to getting rejected. And those, if I didn't have those 4 years, we wouldn't be talking right now.
Right.
You know, I think like if you, like one of my favorite artists is Chance the Rapper
mm-hmm.
and you're like, what's a great headline? 23-year-old with like 3 Grammys.
Right.
Okay. But when this kid was 15, he had a brilliant mixtape.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like we like to hold on to the numbers. But even like someone like Simone Biles, she's 19, mm-hmm. like 4,000 gold medals.
Gosh, she's amazing.
She's been doing this for over 10 years already.
Right.
So I feel like we don't acknowledge that part
yeah.
of the conversation enough. Like, I've been writing since I was like 6 or 7.
Right.
It was bad.
But you've still been
but
doing
like,
it.
I was like, it's gonna always going to be bad when you start.
Yeah.
So I was like, if you start at 7,
yeah.
you know, we're still starting at the same level, but if like if my all my bad books, if I have 10 years of bad books and try and write a good one, and okay, it's better, but it's still not good enough, which is my first book story, you know, that's not overnight.
I think so often people would rather use the word prodigy because it sounds more fun.
It sounds, it's exciting. It's like sparkly. Exactly. But it's just, I'm like, I don't know anyone.
Oh, she's 23, but like you said, you've been doing this for...
More like of my conscious life.
Right, exactly. So, but all that said, what did it feel like when you got the book deal and the movie deal and just...
I still don't understand, you know, like it wasn't until I saw, like, they made this a beautiful sampler, and it's the first 70 pages, and it wasn't until I saw a cover for it that I was like, okay, I think we're actually going to make a book.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I'm like, this could be a long joke, they could change their mind, you know, I was like, this doesn't have to be real, like, it could just be like, lol, here's your dream, it's taken away, but I was like, okay, no, someone invested, like, time and artistic creativity into making a cover, and I don't think they would do that if this was really just one big joke, so, like, I'm still in the process of being like, oh, this is, because it's like I said, since I've always wanted to publish a book, I didn't always admit to myself that I wanted to be a writer, but, like, this has been a dream. So even when I saw the sampler, I held on to it for like 6 hours, like just like this. I took it with me out, and that's people were like, amazing. "Oh, I've already seen it." I was like, "Okay, but I'll keep, you know, like
I'm gonna keep showing you."
Yeah, don't I was like, "Let me. That. I just need to keep like this in my pocket to really feel that it's real." And I started to get over that. And then someone tweeted a picture of themselves holding it. And I'm like, you are another human. You are holding it, you know? So then it starts all over again. So I would say I still don't. And now we're on the book. I was like, even the movie stuff, I was like, what?
Yeah.
You know? So none of this is like, it feels crazy. Uh-huh. It's still a lot of hard work, but it's just really exciting to have people. Writing is really, can be really solitary. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's been really awesome to like meet all these amazing people and like they're putting their amazingness like in the book, whether it's like the actual text or the cover or like the page numbers or like the marketing or like me sitting talk, you know, it's just really cool to be like, oh, look at my squad. Yeah.
Well, in part of it comes with too, and you kind of talk about this on your website a little bit, because you're also a writing coach. You kind of help people along the way, like the right way to do these types of things. And you have something on your site that it's not enough just to write a good story, but you talk about how you did a lot of research in the market and you saw like what's popular, and so like you knew, all right, it's not just that I have to write this story, but I you need to realize what people want to read.
I think a lot of times, like, if something, and like fingers crossed, but a lot of times we look at big successes and we're like, oh, there's no way to achieve that. Or even someone like Beyonce, you're like, you're just born with it. False. Like whenever Beyonce like shows us a kid video, it's like, oh, that's so cute, she's 3 years old, but I was like, she's training. I was like, you've been training for 30 years. I'm trying not to swear, so
you can say anything you like.
I'm like, these are librarians, I don't want them to judge me.
No, wait till you meet some librarians.
But yeah, even someone like, or her, I remember watching a YouTube video and it was a compilation of her, I think it was called like Beyonce's like bossiest moments, but it was just her like very like being, I guess, a perfectionist about like her performance, and I'm like, that makes sense,
right?
Because when I see a Beyonce performance, I am like, it's like Cirque du Soleil up in here, you know? And so I think it's very important to know that those things don't just happen. They require lots of blood, sweat, and tears. And I think especially, I was like, even just publishing a book is like, that's, you know, like, so that's already hard. And then if you, like, you look at someone, you're like, oh, I would love to have a career like that. It's like, we have the internet now. We can stalk hardcore. That's what's crazy about meeting a lot of these people, because I was like, oh, I stalked you. And, like, I, like, looked at what you did, and I looked at what you said about writing. And, you know, like, there's all this advice out there. But I think that's, I really liked the blog before all this happened, because it was just, it feels really good to like let other writers know, hey, your dreams are legitimate, and like, go for it. And now I like that it exists, because if someone goes, oh, overnight success, I was like, I started my blog before I had even finished revising my first book, you know? So I was learning with them. But I always like to be like, hey, you can, it's not, nothing is actually impossible. And if it seems impossible, like, actually look at all the work behind it.
Yeah.
And then if you're a workhorse like me, you're like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
Like when I see Beyonce being like, no, the lights have to be like this, and she's like, it's not working. I'm like, great, that makes me feel
right.
like with 400,000 hours, I can put on a great concert.
Exactly.
And suddenly it's possible. It's right. not just like this pipe dream. And that's what yeah. it is with these books.
Right. Well, and actually, to a much lesser extent for me, like when you're talking about people, you know, you can hardcore stalk people. I never stop feeling creepy because I'm like combing through these office websites and I'm like, you once wrote, I'm gonna bring it up in like 2 seconds.
Yeah, okay.
Something else you have on your site. Like, I always feel like, so you wrote a thing on your website. And like sometimes the websites haven't been updated in a while and the office will look at me like there's no lights on up there. They're just like, where did you find whatever it is yeah. you're talking about, you creepy man?
Yeah.
I'm like, I know, I'm sorry. I want people to know about this stuff. But to continue being creepy.
Yeah, it's like for better or
yeah,
worse.
But,
it's, yeah.
yeah, so you have this gorgeous story on your website called Why I Write. It caught my attention because I have also written a thing literally called Why I Write.
Oh,
yours is much better.
Oh.
But you talk about the tragedy in Charleston in 2016, and I'll be honest, this isn't a question so much as me
yeah.
just putting it out into the world for anyone who hasn't gone and read that yet, that I want them to go to your website and see how you write, just to learn, like, put it into perspective. But do these tragedies and the way that they affect you, they seem to obviously inspire your kind of long form blog
yeah.
stories, but do they also go into like the trilogies and everything
it's
like that?
It's full, because that's the only way I can cope, like, especially in, like I said, even like, so I've been on like obviously like a high from this book stuff, and then I don't know, I think it was a month ago, like the shooting of Jordan Edwards.
Yeah.
And another reason I wasn't just on a high from my book stuff, but like The Hate U Give had been number one for like 8 weeks or something.
Incredible.
And it was awesome. And for me, I look at that and I'm like, okay, I kind of feel like the world's falling apart. Mm-hmm. But if I look at this list, I see like hundreds of people a day are reading this amazing book. Their
yeah.
hearts are being changed. Their minds are being changed. So like progress is happening. Mm-hmm. And then that, like, he was shot and it like crushed me. And a lot of times for me, it's like I can't let everything in, because it's like, even now I'm like, don't let it fully
much.
In
know,
because no one wants to hear you cry on a podcast.
Yeah.
But
you wouldn't be the first one, for what it's
okay.
worth.
Okay, that
say.
Makes me feel better. But yeah, it's just, it's really soul crushing.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, like I said, my book is fully about like the fear
mm-hmm.
associated with living in a world like that. And like I was reading about his family, and they were, you know, the parents were saying like the kids keep having nightmares, they're so afraid.
Yeah.
And I think they might have been in the car like when it you know, so
yeah.
it's like they're like, you're like, okay, I can donate to this memorial fund. It's like, for me personally, I'm like, I can pray, but it's like literally, it's like I have my thing, I let it all in, I cry, and then I'm like, okay, I need to keep writing.
Mm-hmm.
And like for me, it's like if I don't keep writing, then I'm staying in my bed and I'm not getting out.
Right.
And this story with, in the past when the Charleston thing happened, I realized I hadn't been that distraught
mm-hmm.
since the backlash against Rue and the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Where it was literally like, here's this like what 11-year-old black girl being murdered, and here's this portion of people saying, oh, it's not sad, she's black.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you're saying this like, this isn't an anonymous board. I
yeah,
was like,
no,
you
is the
tweeted
thing you
this
put out
with
the
your
world.
Face,
yeah.
like your name. Like, I can Google and see that you've said this. I was like, so there's not even a, like, let me hide this,
right.
you know? And obviously that's fictional. But it's like, even the Star Trek, like a new Star Trek trailer came
yeah.
out, and there's these beautiful women of color. And part of the internet is like, oh my God, this
yeah.
is enraging. And it's like, so for me, there's almost a different level of like hatred.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, or I guess it shows me how deep hatred is when it's applied to a completely fictional setting.
Yeah.
Or like when a black Hermione Granger was cast for the play
mm-hmm.
and people lost it. And I was like, invisibility cloaks, dragons, trolls.
Yeah.
The black Hermione Granger, you're
yeah,
right. Now we're in unbelievable territory.
That's the part you're off board, right, yeah.
So it's, there is no, every day, like just going on Twitter, I send the stories to myself, the things that would make me want to curl up in my bed and cry. I just send them to myself, and I'm like, okay, this is why you're writing.
Yeah.
When it's like 3 a.m. and you're like, oh my God, no. It's like, no, this is why. Because it's like, if this even changes one person who then like goes in the world differently, or if it even changes like one kid who then becomes a cop one day, I was like, then it is more than worth it. And
yeah.
it is worth agonizing over, like, is this character arc working? Is this comma placement, you know? So it's like, I feel like you, it's like you drown in it. And I'm not saying you can always stay above it. Like, mm-hmm. I said, like, there hasn't been, it hasn't, it's not like these stories have stopped.
Right.
You know? So it's like, I'm not always like, oh, horrible world. Like, I have to vanquish you. Like, no, sometimes I still feel very much like I want to curl up and, like, not leave in my bed for the next 60 years and then peace out. But then you, it's like, you don't always have to be strong, but I feel like at least whatever it is that brings you down or makes you feel just very small, it's like, okay, let yourself feel that fear, but then you need to find whatever it is you can do. Mm-hmm. I was like, even if it's just running, like if it was literally running around a track, I mean, I'd be so fit, it'd be great. It's not that, it's sitting. But it's like you find that thing that makes you not feel hopeless and makes you feel like you have some power, and you like hold on to that because the world is still crazy. I do in my heart believe it is getting better, but it is still crazy, and it's going to take time for it to not feel as crazy and as unsafe and as kind of heartbreaking.
I'm going to transition to something lighter.
Okay.
So
I feel like that's all my interviews were just like.
No, I would
also magic.
No, it's amazing. We end our podcast with something we call the Nerd Nine because we like alliteration.
And I love alliteration.
So these are lighthearted.
Blood and bone.
I have blood and bone. Yeah. So we say these are rapid fire. They never end up being rapid fire because I get sidetracked. But the first one, it's always my fault. The first one is, what's the last book you finished?
I think it's And I Darken by Kirsten White.
No one will know if it's not, so we can use
that. Yeah. Yeah.
they're not going to end up that kind of like, tell me you're lying.
It's not the last book you read. I hacked your Kindle.
That's right. Do you have a favorite place to read?
My bed. Mm-hmm. I have this electric blanket. It was a birthday present from my boyfriend like 2 years ago because I didn't know electric blankets existed.
Yeah.
And he just had this like a small heating pad for like his neck or something, and I would like curl my whole body into it. So he got me this big blanket, and it's too. I live in California. It's always too hot for him. Always like dehydrated, but I like to get like put it on high and like get under the blanket, and love that. That's like my safe. I'm thinking of that now. I'm like, oh, I should go home. Yeah. Like a lot of.
That's amazing. Do you have a guilty pleasure? Like, I always tell people mine is, if you go on my Instagram account, I have two dogs, and it's just, like, a gross amount of pictures of them. Like, too many pictures of my dogs. Like, do you have something that you're just like, I probably shouldn't do that as often as I do?
I would definitely say Avatar The Last Airbender fan art.
Incredible.
There was a period, and I don't draw it. I just like it a lot, and then send it to anyone who might like it half as much as me. So that's a lot of my, you know, and it's funny because Pinterest algorithms, like whatever I'm obsessed with at the period, they feed the guilt.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you like this one, here's 400 more, and here's a whole board, there's 6,000 pins of your favorite. And now I feel like I'm getting to the point where there's repeats because I'm on it so much. You still, every once in a while, you discover something new, so you're like, let me keep.
Do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
I guess Thanksgiving, because my mom makes, she makes jollof rice, she makes fried rice. So I don't have we don't ever have turkey because we're like, I don't know. I don't want to make a statement and be like, Nigerians don't like turkey.
Yeah.
I'm sure one does.
Yeah.
I do not.
You can just say we don't. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't eat turkey either.
Yeah, so it's a lot of really good like Nigerian rice. Mm-hmm. And my editor, she knows I love Sprite, and that's the one time a year there's a lot of Sprite in my house, and then there's these cookies, so it's like I'm just stuffed.
That's amazing. By the way, the nonverbal communication there would be editor shook her head yes during I've lost track of myself. Oh, do you have a place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
Yes, Bora Bora.
Ooh, that's a good answer. Are you a dog person or a cat person?
Dogs.
That's the right answer.
Oh, God.
So my co-host, who is not here, so I can throw her under the bus, she's a cat lady. I am a dog guy. We don't really have a fun name for that. But it's our eternal battle. It's the only reason we put that in there is because we want, we're keeping a mental tally.
It's a big deal for me when someone says that. I'm always in this thing where I'm like, you can't adopt a dog right now. But I'm like, but look at all of these puppies who need a home.
Oh, I'd be a bad influence. So I'll stop it now. So do you have Man, favorite food?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I have so many, though. So I'm like, and I know that defeats the favorite. Okay. But it's like, okay, it's easily pizza. Like, okay. I could, there have been times, like, where I just ate pizza twice a day. Like, yeah. That was my meal.
Oh, I'm going to eat pizza as soon as we're done recording this.
I know. I'm like, oh, I should get pizza. I know. So it's definitely pizza. My two favorite types of pizza are Giordano's stuffed spinach pizza, because I'm from Chicago. And then there's this place in San Diego called, like, Zia Gourmet. Mm-hmm. And its pizza is, like... Yeah, I was like, yeah, I don't know if you can describe that, but it is an explosion of flavor. So
Tommy is excited.
Yeah, Tommy's very excited. Eyes are very excited.
Is it like a California style pizza? Like,
I don't even know what they put. I think they put raisins in it, and raisins are like not my thing, but it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I love all kinds of Asian food.
Yeah, yes.
But I don't like to eat it in front of people I'm trying to be professional with, because I look messy.
So how are you with chopsticks?
I'm it's not even the chopsticks, it's just like it's too hot to eat.
Yeah.
But I have no patience.
Uh-huh.
And then like, how do I take a bite? So it's like, oh no, the whole dumpling's in my mouth.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
scalding. I'm choking. I'm happy though.
I ate ramen with a couple coworkers and my wife yesterday, and I just looked like a monster the
yeah,
whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the last one, if you could have dinner with one person alive or dead, who would you choose?
Oh,
I know. I'm sorry.
I know. There's
so
many people.
I was so apologetic when I asked this.
Let's say Michelle Obama.
That is an incredible answer.
Yeah. I'm like, I hope for her sake we're never in the same room.
Yeah.
Because.
Just because you'll go out, just kind of attack her with a hug.
It's like, even now, like I said, I was like, oh, I met Lee today. I was trying so hard not to cry. Mm-hmm. There's none of that.
Yeah.
So, and I don't even, you know, so I'm just imagining her, like, elegant, mm-hmm. like, icon, like, me sobbing ferociously in the corner, like, her Secret Service being like, okay, we're going to steer you away.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, yeah, that would be.
That's a great
If
answer.
I could trick her into sitting at a table with me after I cry, that would be great.
Perfect. Yeah, see her from a distance, cry, then go talk to her.
Yeah, even then, I don't know, probably matter. Still yeah. cry.
All right, so my last question before I let you go. What do you hope readers take away when they read Children of Blood and Bone?
There's two things I really want, which I don't know if it's fair to say two
That's
things.
That's okay. Two things works.
The first thing is definitely just understanding sort of that, like, oh, here's what it would be like to sort of be in a society where you're scared of a cop car. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's just saying, it's just, it's a very intense, or like where me, where I was, there was a period where I was personally scared to get in a car. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, if I get stopped by a cop, I really don't know how that ends.
Right.
And it's like, and I'm just living me. It's like my parents live in Chicago. My brother lives in LA, you know? So it's like, so it's, you know, it's not like a thing in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just like understanding like that fear mm-hmm. and really, and hopefully that making enough of an impact deep down to somehow make a change. Like, I don't know if that's 2 years or 4 years, you know, something, uh-huh. but like, you know, just sort of have that same sort of, oh, that's what Voldemort looks like. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is just, I never read about black characters growing up. I didn't even realize how messed up it was that the characters I wrote weren't black till like senior year of high school. So
right.
I was like 18 or something. So that's 18, that's at least like 10 years of writing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why aren't my characters black? You know, like it's deep. It, like, it digs deep into your, like, subconscious and self-esteem and all of those things. So to just be like, oh, I love this story and all of the characters are black. Or to, like, look at this cover. Like, I saw a glimpse of my cover today. It was on accident and I, like, ran away because I was like, I cannot see more. I cannot break down in the middle of BEA. Uh-huh. It's not on my itinerary. So I just hope for that, like, little girl to get what I desperately wanted but didn't even know I was missing, mm-hmm. you know, to hopefully to, like, walk into that bookstore and be like, hey, she looks like me. Like, oh, and then look at the back. Oh, she looks like me.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, those things, I didn't realize how much they mattered until I saw all these deep things. Like, why am I not writing black character, you know? So, so knowing now how important those things are, those are the two things I'm hoping that readers get.
Well, tell me, your passion comes through so clearly, and I have no doubt it's going to in your book as well. I cannot wait to read this. I can't wait for the world to read it. Thank you so much for
joining
us.
Thank you. This has been really fun.
Absolutely.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our ninth season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.